I'm Darren.
And I'm Mindy, and we are the Rants Macabre.
So, it's summer. From the time we're kids, it's built into us that summer is a time of freedom, free from school, with good weather. Especially for those kids who are lucky enough to go to summer camp, it's a time for adventure. I never went to a traditional sleepaway camp. I was a camp counselor at a cheap day camp in my hometown, and I tried to flirt with all the lady counselors, but because it was a day camp, there was no sneaking away to drink or have sex or do drugs. Mm-hmm. I will say, being a counselor as a teenager at that time with that job, I definitely relate to the stereotypical camp counselors who inevitably doom themselves by following their impulses.
Sure, sure.
Camp is a few worlds overlapping each other. That's what I find most interesting. You've got the innocence of youth and in the majesty of nature layered under the barely capable teenagers responsible for all of it. So this setting is fraught with potential disaster, and it only seems offset by the sheer optimism of youth. Through the 80s and early 90s, summer camp movies were a regular trend with Meatballs, Little Darlings, Ernest Goes to Camp.
Yay!
I could go on forever. At the same time, the slasher genre had risen as a cheap, easy money grab for studios. That kind of explains why it's a genre filled with mostly bad movies.
Yeah.
But there are a couple classics, a few gems that I'm really excited to talk about. However, let's start with the now infamous sleepaway camp.
Yay.
Come, children. Let's be on our way.
So 1983 sits it between Friday the 13th, 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it from start to finish, actually knowing the end.
I knew the end. I have seen it in high school.
Oh,
and
you did?
I never watched it again.
Okay.
So I don't remember. Obviously, everyone knows the ending.
I wonder, though.
I think everyone knows the ending.
I think horror fans probably do.
I think most. Well, I don't know, I guess. I don't know what average people think because I don't know any of
the
them.
The tragedy is it's a Google search away to completely ruin the movie.
But does it really ruin the movie? I mean, the movie is bad enough.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, Sleepaway Camp is very little redeeming about it. Mm-hmm. I think, if anything, mm-hmm. it kind of rests in that place where there are funny moments that weren't meant to be funny.
Sure.
It's just full of terrible acting, a terrible script, really low budget. I did notice very quickly that it starts off with the boat accident. And so there's two kids and their dad on a little schooner. And the kids, their two shot is done in a studio with a gray background.
Okay.
So you go from them outside with dad to isolated shot with them just... there they are talking to each
it's
other
like
alone
Power
in
Rangers.
The studio.
They're suddenly fighting in the mountains.
It was terrible. So, yeah, boat accident. there was a conspicuous amount of bad language. It was like kids trying to act grown up or give it some edge because this movie didn't actually have any nudity, did it? I don't think it had any nudity. For all the gore and stuff,
I don't know.
It didn't go there.
There is in Sleepaway Camp, too.
Oh.
Right off the bat.
Yeah. 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 They really.
I made a note while watching it.
Course correct.
Boobs.
For everything they did wrong.
They're like, you know what would make this movie better? Nudity.
So, as far as things it's got going for it, there's some pretty impressive softball play in the middle of the movie.
Which I can appreciate. You can appreciate. We played softball.
I did. And, like, I'm kind of being sincere, but it's completely unrelated to the plot, but a good game.
Nice.
They played a pretty good game. because it's the 80s, there are a conspicuous amount of, that's going to be my word for this episode, conspicuous, short shorts.
Yes.
And crop top shirts on dudes.
Yeah, I don't know. I was going to say, I kind of think that should be a trend again, is crop tops on dudes. Mm. But then, you know, like.
Not everybody's an Abercrombie model.
No, no.
It's kind of inviting disaster. So one of my favorite moments, there's a point where the boys group are trying to get the girls to skinny dip, but it doesn't work. They completely strike out. So they go, fuck it, we'll just skinny dip ourselves.
Of course, because, naked swimming
so
with your friends is the thing to do.
Come on, girls. The water is really warm at night. And what do you say, huh?
I don't know, Billy.
It's all very simple, right?
Why don't you start with Addis?
The hell with you then. You don't know how to have any fun anyway. Come on, boys.
at that point, like, you don't have to be naked.
No, nope, just if wear you, your underwear.
Just swimming with the dudes. It was weird. I didn't.
You don't
I didn't
do
completely
that. You didn't
that.
Do that at your camp.
No, you keep your pants on. I mean, for fear of arrest. Well, in my case, I was a camp counselor, so especially bad. As it relates to the movie, most of the early attacks look like accidents. So the camp operator is kind of greedy, doesn't want to sound the alarm and send kids home because he's going to lose money. So he puts up with a surprising amount of terror happening to his campers and employees.
He was horsing around, a canoe tipped over, he must have hit his head.
I don't think so. Weren't any bumps or bruises when I checked. Though, again, I'm no expert on this matter.
It was obviously an accident. I mean, the boy might have got scared and panicked, right?
That could be a logical explanation.
So it was one of those fluke accidents we could not have foreseen, and that is all there is to it.
I don't know.
It was an accident. I mean, that's what the officer said, right?
I said the autopsy will be more conclusive.
How many people need to die at your camp, even if it's an accident, to...
Well, for him, three.
then you three sound the alarm.
Between someone being stung to death by a beehive being dropped in a bathroom stall. That's going pretty far to rate that one an accident.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So how did it get in there?
Because not even a prank. They don't even call it a prank. They're just like, oh, it was a terrible coincidence.
There was a beehive in the toilet.
One of the, this was pushing it, I thought, but, done mostly in silhouette. The lead mean girl is seemingly fucked to death with a curling iron.
Terrifying.
Which it's hot. Like it goes from her using it to her being attacked. And then yeah, in silhouette.
Danger. Because I've burnt myself with a curling iron or two.
On the outside.
Yeah. Clear.
That's gross.
You're gross.
That's gross.
Thanks for that.
All right, so...
And that's why I wear pants.
Towards the end, I had you bring this up on Google Images, and listener, please do the same, because there's no way I can do it justice. But towards the end of the movie, there's a cop with the most absurd plastic mustache. And when I was watching it the first time, I swore maybe someone downloaded this, edited this ridiculous moment into the movie, and then uploaded it, and that's what I saw. But it turns out, no, that cop is in the movie earlier, and he's just rocking a mustache.
Yeah, his mustache is fine and full.
Yeah, cop mustache. And then cut to the end, and it seems like makeup department panicked and glued a comb to his face.
It's like someone took a Sharpie marker on some scotch tape and then just like stuck it on.
It was about that good. Yeah. Okay. So without outright spoiling it, I'm going to read the end of the synopsis.
Okay.
And it says, who is the twisted individual behind these murders? The disclosure of the murderer's identity is the most shocking climax in the history of American cinema.
It's relatively shocking. It doesn't matter, though.
Right. It is
That's the
random
thing.
As random gets.
It doesn't make a difference at all.
No. No, it does not. Let's just say that the end is hugely insensitive to the LGBT.
Yes, definitely.
And trans community, and exploits some really bad stigmas. But yeah, completely out of left field, completely unrelated.
And it, yeah, has nothing to do with it. So it's not even really a twist. It's just this is another thing that is also happening. I don't get it.
And the shot is a rudimentary special effects shot. So it's practically a still image. And it's kind of like, it really is bananas, crazy, insane. The look of it.
Uh-huh.
And just the last sentiment of the movie. Yeah, I don't know.
I think today, though, it's really, really insensitive.
Oh, yeah. And it, let's see, does it get worse in the second one? Offhanded comments
and
remarks.
Yeah, they say some stuff, yeah.
It's just weird that they bring back that character.
Who's played by Bruce Springsteen's sister.
Yeah, that's, was it? I didn't look up whether it was filmed in New Jersey. I was keeping track that Friday the 13th was filmed in New Jersey. The Burning was filmed in New York. I don't know where Sleepaway Camp was filmed.
I don't know where that was filmed. But Madman was done in
If Springsteen's sister is in it. Okay. If Springsteen's sister is in it, I kind of assume it was New Jersey. But
yeah, they probably also didn't have like money to drive these people or fly these people anywhere. So
no.
They were hiring local talent.
Sleepaway to Unhappy Campers.
Yes.
With Renee Estevez. And if that's familiar, it's because it's Martin Sheen's daughter, who I know from a recurring role on The West Wing, where she's just like an assistant around the White House. But apparently she's the lead female in this one. It's a softcore porn.
There's a lot of boobs. Right away.
There's a lot of sex, too.
Because there's the girl who just won't put on her shirt. She's like the pretty girl.
She's eager to flat. Like, that's her defying authority. It's like here in New York, and there's the documentary now about, like, unleashing the boobs and free the nipple.
That's what she was doing.
Yeah, back in 84, I don't know, 86.
Which kind of makes some sense.
Actually, no, this was later. This was closer to 88, 89.
Because Angela hates it. And that's Bruce Springsteen's sister. Yeah. She hates the boobs. So, I don't know.
Yeah. So that sex crazed girl kind of plays the villain. She's got a couple choice lines in the movie. Sex is her weapon.
That was fun. Listen, you don't have AIDS or anything, do you?
No.
Great.
Fair enough.
Yeah, no, really tries to come on to
everything. I hated how they don't like the two sisters that are like...
They
call them
the shit sisters.
They call them the shit sisters. But they're the coolest campers there.
They're drinking, they're smoking, they're having sex.
Yeah. And they have like poison posters on their walls. They're the coolest ones. And they're so mean to them.
Yeah, they don't last long.
No.
Angela does not like them. I don't know. Were there things about the second one that struck you as worth talking about?
I did like, which was something I've noticed in all these camp movies. So, and I never went to camp because I'm not a rich asshole, but,
well, the kids, it's not their fault.
I'm jealous, but it seems like there's always a song.
I'll do my favorite, the Happy Camper song.
And Unhappy Camper starts out with quite a song that Angela gets because she's the goody two shoes.
Is it the
camp
Happy
counselor.
Camper song?
It's the Happy Camper song, which everyone seems to know. And they sing it, like, relatively not like this is the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
That was the... yeah. It
and there's hand signals, too.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, there's a whole routine that goes with this.
It's just... it didn't sound very good, and eventually just became this cacophony. And, you know, that's probably the audio department's fault, but actually how funny would that be if, like, the whole group spent the whole day rehearsing that song, and then the audio department's who fucked it up? Because I heard it and I was just like, this sounds like they rehearsed for 10 minutes before they played
it. I'm sure that's
how
it went. But it seems to be like a trend. There's songs always at camp. There's camp songs.
Yeah. It's pretty early in the first Friday the 13th where they're singing like religious songs. It kind of stands in contrast where the first couple runs off to have sex in a room and they're the first ones to eat it. But yeah, summer camp and songs. It goes together.
I mean, other notes from my sleepaway camp notes, we talked about most everything. Oh, this is a note just in general. Don't ever wake me up with a whistle. That's how Angela wakes people up.
Don't do that.
That would be the end of that whistle.
It was just short of banging garbage can tops together.
Who does that?
Like it's basic training.
Why would you sign up for this?
Yeah, I don't know. Also, getting up early in the morning, the whole thing puzzled me. I mean, they're... elements that I am straight jealous about summer camp. Like, I kind of wish I had learned how to start a fire, make a canoe, you know, woodsy activities. But the getting up in the morning and all that seems completely unnecessary.
Learning a song, not needed.
No.
The camp
but
that
you went to musical camp.
The camp that I did go to, it was no musical theater
musical
camp.
Musical theater camp.
So that's me.
You guys sang songs. You can't really. Well, I guess you weren't knocking them for the summer camp song.
Yeah. We sang songs. Mine was from Fiddler on the Roof, so.
What's your problem? You and kids like you. Very funny.
Okay, so there are a ton of movies in this genre that we gave a cursory glance and opted not to talk about specifically, but just to give you an idea of the horrors that are out there, we've got a cheerleader camp. That's AKA Bloody Pom Poms, starring Leif Garrett.
You know that's going to be quality.
Not by the trailer, it's not. Camp Blood is like a no-budget movie from 1999. It looks like it's shot on VHS. It's on YouTube. However, there is a gratuitous sex scene with nudity, so listener, you can find that on YouTube, nudity on YouTube. That's how low budget and unconcerned everybody is about this movie. It's
no
on
one
YouTube,
even noticed it.
And there's boobs. So they've made a whole bunch of the Camp Blood movies. There's Camp Massacre, which really is Fat Camp Massacre.
Which I was a little excited about that. Because I thought that sounded like a really like lose weight or die.
It is. It's kind of the Biggest Loser with consequences. But I was thinking like you could sort of pluck at some heartstrings with like fat kids who didn't want to be there.
Right.
And then start like picking on them. And like that's a dramatic story. But no, this is adult men. It stars Brie Olsen, the porn star.
How is she at fat camp?
She must be a counselor.
Oh, fair enough. Okay.
I mean, she's... I don't know.
I didn't watch the movie.
She's got a shower scene, judging by the trailer. And yes, there. I watched the trailer for Bloody Bible Camp, which looks equally ridiculous.
Some people like it, though. People talk about it like they like it.
I think they're kind of enjoying the schlock, but I can't bring myself. After Sleepaway Camp 1 and 2, like, I'm done. I'm tapping
fair enough,
out.
Fair enough.
I don't have another bad summer camp horror movie in me.
I had just general thoughts about these camp movies, and since I never went to real camp, this is what I can imagine happens. There's a lot of singing at camp, which is similar to my musical theater camp.
Sure.
So that's like hand in hand. And each camp seems to have its own song that people have like really thought about writing. And
some of these camps have been around since like the 30s, I think. Camp
is this
Crystal
a real
Lake
thing?
Said,
camp song? I don't know. I don't want to sing any.
All I know,
song.
The Simpsons Camp Krusty, like that, they had a song. So
it must be.
I'll go along with that premise.
There's so much sex. That's all you do at camp, it seems.
Look, I asked for lubricated rubbers. These aren't lubricated rubbers. You understand that?
What am I, Masters and Johnson? You want lubes? Buy your own.
Yeah, the counselors outnumber the campers like 5-1.
They do.
And seems to be the case. And they never watch them. Even though there's 5-1, you never see the other kids. I also think that I could have expected a lot of wandering away from the group. Everyone likes to wander out in the woods.
Oh, well, I was
as
a camp counselor. And yeah, there are a couple kids that the parents should give you a heads up. They never do. They never do.
That this kid is going to wander out.
Yeah. For me, it was a 6-year-old named Brian who is probably on the spectrum. But I needed to have an eye on him at all times because he would just go off and then I'd look up and have to chase him down. Yeah.
Introduce
that to our trips to the water park, and that was a fucking, that was a trial. I was not paid enough.
I can expect being naked a lot in a camp. It seems like I would not wear my shirt.
Not the good girls.
No, but it seems like a lot of people are... just getting naked for the
skinny
fun of it.
Skinny dipping. I kind
of, yeah, there's
I
a lot
know.
Of skinny dipping, which,
again,
no.
I missed out.
Yeah, and then my only other thing was always bring a machete, because everyone seems to have weapons, and those people who don't have weapons have weed, and those people die immediately.
It's either weapons or weed.
Yeah, those are your choices.
You should really send your kid to camp with a shield, because they're all like cutting implements, so you want to send them into battle prepared.
Fair enough.
But machetes and, yeah.
So that's what I expect at camp, I guess.
Okay, so segueing us back into good movies.
Okay.
In her review for Halloween 4, unrelated but still related, April from Save Horror wrote, "Children are viewed as honest and pure, which makes them ideal candidates for a horror film. The audience sympathizes easily with children, and they believe their fear, which in turn heightens the viewer's fear." It's too bad more of these movies don't make use of little kids, because they're a good source of like innocence and potential ingenuity. When we talk about Mad Men, I was kind of hoping that a camp for gifted kids would pay off. Like
it doesn't.
Like Home Alone rigged a couple traps. And
no, he
got
doesn't
the guy.
Even want to like drive the bus at the end of it. Like these kids are terrible. These are the nerdiest kids. This is nerd camp.
Right.
But we'll talk about that.
They're
I guess.
Not even. Ugh. Okay. So better note. Friday the 13th,
yes.
1980, the original.
Mm-hmm.
These were the Saw series or Paranormal Activity series of their days, because they were cheap to make and they were a reliable box office draw. So they made just about one a year for a long stretch.
Yeah.
So everybody knows Jason, who's frankly kind of a ripoff of Michael Myers. And there's a couple of parallels. They kind of ape the POV shots.
Mm-hmm.
And we also get the same dynamic in terms of the musical cues where they kind of a little bit telegraph, you know, that you're watching his perspective and like the shark in Jaws, he's gonna take someone down.
Sure, sure.
So that music is Harry Manfredi's music, and I still have a soft spot for that music. Like when I was a little kid and I played the Friday the 13th game on Super, mm-hmm. not even Super Nintendo, NES, regular Nintendo, yeah. It gave me chills. That 8-bit version really gave me anxiety, and I still love the ch-ch-ch-ch.
Sure.
Or whatever. People speculate as to what the guy was actually saying with the delay, but I don't know. We'll play it in the background. So the original title, to give you how much of a sense they were going into this with, the original working title for the script was Long Night at Camp Blood.
Fair enough.
And they actually refer to Camp Blood. There's the crazy guy in town who like
right,
warns
the
girl.
The bicycle riding guy.
Yeah.
Sure. You know he has a DUI. That's why he's riding that bike.
You're going to Camp Blood, ain't you?
God damn it, Ralph. Get out of here. Go on, get. Leave people alone.
You'll never come back again.
Oh, shut up, Ralph.
It's got a death curse.
He's a real prophet of doom, ain't he?
He actually comes back in the second one,
the
and I don't know if he's the first guy that Jason kills in the second movie, but he sure as hell gets behind him with, and what do you call the wire across the neck, like garroting?
I don't know. I didn't know there was a name for it.
Okay, well, like in like World War One style, I don't know.
Flim flams. Got a bad case of the flim flams.
He tell you anything? Camp Crystal Lake is jinxed.
Oh, terrific. Not you, too. You sound like your crazy friend back there, Ralph.
Well, maybe. Did Christy tell you about the two kids murdered in 58? Huh? Boy drowning in 57? A bunch of fires? Nobody knows who did any of them. In 1962, they was going to open up. The water was bad. Christy will wind up just like these folks. Crazy and broke. He's been up there a year fixing up that place. He must have dropped $25,000. And for what? Ask anybody. Quit.
I can't.
Dumb kids. Know it all. It's like my nieces. Heads full of rocks.
So one of my favorite through lines of a lot of these movies is that Tom Savini
yes.
was working his ass off in the early 80s.
He was doing everything.
So he did the makeup design and some of the special effects stuff for Jason and the kills throughout the movie. The ending apparently was his idea, on the boat.
Everything about showing him at the end, showing Jason Voorhees is Tom Savini.
Yeah.
Yeah, like 100%.
Yeah.
He was originally supposed to be a normal kid, like a regular normal kid that just had like mental disabilities, but Tom Savini said no, let's really deform this kid up.
Yeah,
which is iconic.
We'll post some images of the special effects because they've mm-hmm. got, and it's always hysterical to watch people in their special effects makeup just kind of off camera yeah. fucking around, and so like there's this kid, this teenage boy is just like deformed and smiling. Oh, so part one gets It covers unique territory. If anybody's seen the movie Scream and mm-hmm. hasn't seen Friday the 13th, I think you're pretty familiar that Mrs. Voorhees
I think everyone
plays
does.
A substantial
well,
part.
I'm Mrs. Voorhees.
And I think that leads to a lot of the sort of necessary ingenuity in terms of she is not a hulking monster.
Right.
Her kills relied on the element of surprise.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, like, you know, the characters are surprises the viewers in a lot of places. And that's a great turn. And even when we arrive at her reveal, that's a great moment where mm-hmm. she's sort of giving you, I mean, it's a little, well, it's all exposition, but when you see her character flip and all of a sudden, you know, Mrs. Voorhees is a fucking crazy person.
That's right.
That's a great, I still love that moment.
Oh God, this place.
Steve should never have opened this place again. There's been too much trouble here. Did you know that a young boy drowned the year before those two others were killed? The counselors weren't paying any attention. They were making love while that young boy drowned. His name was Jason.
I was working the day that it happened, preparing meals. Here, I was the cook. Jason should have been
watched every minute.
He wasn't a very good swimmer. We can go now, dear.
I think we should wait for Mr. Christie.
Oh, that's not necessary.
I don't understand.
So, there's a little trivia piece. Camp Crystal Lake is actually a real place in New York State. But it was filmed in New Jersey, so hometown represent.
Because for some reason, I'm stupid. I always thought it was in Michigan. I don't know. In my mind, always it was Michigan, but it's not. It's New York. It's upstate New York.
Yeah. Well,
I don't know why I thought that.
The accents? But like, I can't think of any of the actors.
I really can't tell you why.
Okay, so the year after, in 1981, they release Friday the 13th Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time we've got Jason, and they've retconned it a little bit, whether he's a dream or a supernatural creature.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're making a face.
It gets really silly. Then I think later on in the other movies of like, why
he's supernatural.
Yeah.
Why mm-hmm. he walks at a very slow pace, but manages to come around corners and yeah. Secret behind all that, Jason teleports. I don't know if you knew.
Nice. Also, yeah, there's so many things that he's capable of doing that's just impossible.
Such as?
The stabbing of Kevin Bacon is a great one.
Well, that was the mom.
Well, yes.
Through the bed, you're saying.
Yeah, with the arm over Kevin Bacon. I'm a lady. I'm a tiny lady, right? I am a tiny lady, I guess. But she's holding on to him and stabbing through the bed.
Yeah.
How are you doing that?
I think between her crazy and her obsession for her son, maybe she channeled that kind of mom strength that people talk about,
but
like lifting cars.
It's a physical impossibility. It's like she's hugging a mattress and holding him down and stabbing him.
Was he close to the edge of the bed?
No, he's right in the middle. He's right in the middle.
That was maybe my favorite kill of the movie. And yeah, that's actually a good sort of reminder that a young Kevin Bacon, so starting the 6 degrees at a pretty early 1980s age. So that was the first one, and that's still Mama Voorhees taking out the trash.
Yeah. Aww.
Okay, so the second one, this is pre-hockey mask. Mm-hmm. So the archetypal Halloween costume of Jason and the hockey mask, that doesn't actually get introduced into the third one. At that point, he's sort of loose. He's not limited to the campgrounds. In this one, he's just wearing a sack on his head, and I think he just got one eye. Kind of elephant man style.
Because the other one's kind of down.
Right, it's in a different place on his head.
Yeah. Like a Goonies situation.
But incidentally, the sack on the head was based directly from the town that dreaded sundown, mm-hmm. the 1976 movie, and the more recent remake from last year.
It just seems like really impractical because then you'd have no peripheral vision.
Maybe like that explains like why he's hitting so hard. Like he thinks they're closer than they are, so the thrust is, it seems ultraviolent, but
he
meant it a little more gentle. He's like, I don't need to exert myself that much.
That's why everything goes through the body, all the way through.
There you go.
Excellent. All right. Well, we've solved that mystery. Good. We're getting shit done today.
So I think it's kind of funny that, like, I love these movies. They're kind of slasher classics. But even to themselves, they're aping directly two different movies to start mm-hmm. from. So they're mm-hmm. just kind of looking at the mark and going, like, well, what slasher movies have worked? Let's just do that.
Like, it's not that they're bad. Some of them are actually really, really bad, but I don't like these movies. I don't like the Friday the 13th movies.
Really? Not even the first two?
I mean, it's fine and it's fun.
Freddy
and
versus Jason.
There are some of the best deaths that I've ever seen in this series.
Yeah,
I mean,
that's what they've got going for them.
Excellent deaths, yeah. But
you don't see these for the acting.
Yeah, well, it's just sometimes he shows up later on and I don't know why he even came back to life. And
his buried corpse gets struck by lightning.
Yeah, that's
through a fence rail. Yeah,
and then the government really gets a hold of him and.
In Jason X in space, yes.
Yeah.
He is kind of recovered from grounds of Camp Crystal, like something odd like that. But
just, I can't deal with that shit.
So part two starts us off pretty close to the end of part one.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an excerpt from IMDb. When the filmmakers asked Adrian King to reprise her role as Alice, she said that she wanted to be on screen for a short period of time because there was an obsessive fan who was stalking her, broke into her apartment, and she feared for her life. So figure the filmmakers were now faced with an actress who didn't want to be in a slasher movie. What can we do? Can we have her character murdered? It's like, wow. That was
right
clever.
Let's do it.
So Alice from the first movie doesn't make it very long into part two. Which
is a trend, in a lot of horror sequels. Like in The Grudge 2, Sarah Michelle Gellar comes back just to get smashed.
I haven't seen that one yet.
Oh, sorry.
But I'm thinking it's kind of a bummer that like this character that you've been on this, journey with just eats it in the first couple of minutes. So like she didn't really win.
No.
Although, if it wasn't going to be Jason, she's probably going to suffer from some pretty bad PTSD. So.
Exactly. So you might as well,
Yeah. It wasn't going to work out for Alice.
It wasn't going to be a good life.
So I actually did enjoy that they don't telegraph a lot of the attacks, with the exception of the jump scare, which they really lean into with the music.
Mm-hmm.
And her cat jumps out at her.
Yeah, and you had made a note, like, cats don't just jump out of places.
No.
I've never had a cat that would jump out and scare me.
You know what? I just had a sad thought that, like, there was some PA who threw a cat
at her.
Because there is no cat that jumps on command. Cats can barely be bothered to do anything. And so the idea that, like, all right, and go, and the cat's just looking at you like, fuck off.
Exactly.
No, you have to pick up and throw that cat.
It's like, my job today was throwing the cat. I threw the cat about 20 times.
We had to change cats halfway through. That's pretty sad. And I'm just thinking, like, you throw a cat, it'll probably pop its claws just because it's kind of in a what-the-fuck mode. And now you've got a cat in the air, claws out,
right.
Aimed at Alice.
So you don't even have to act. It's method, really.
So I don't think the cat heard her, but they did make a note that Jason heard her because the ice pick that he's supposed to jab her in the forehead with, in the temple, rather,
what can go wrong?
It didn't retract. So he gave her a good one right in the head. So that's what she came back for, to literally be stabbed in the head.
See, I wondered too, because there were two different Jasons in that movie. Actually, there was three different. The first guy who you see who's unmasked, Jason, he gets fired because he was incapable of doing the stunt. So I wonder which one actually stabbed her in the head.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah, and that's actually a good note that in at least the second one, the actor playing Jason is not an intimidating, hulking figure.
Well, he's around 6'1", because I got the... all of my information here on my notes that I like to take. But yeah, Steve Dash, not a big guy, who ended up being Jason for the most part of that movie. He's not a big guy.
He's the one who was fired.
No.
No?
The Warrington Gillette. Isn't that a fancy name?
Yeah, you expect to meet that guy at a country club, not wearing like kind of distorted figure face.
Yeah. But yeah, no, got fired. He was 6'1", but not like Jason becomes like this hulking, huge person later on. In that one,
the more powers they grant him, the bigger he gets. Yeah. It is kind of,
Well, and that's why they,
you're never going to win.
When it was Freddy versus Jason, that's why they changed the actor again. Because Kane Hodder was was Jason previous to that, like four movies in a row. Then they switch because they wanted a guy who, even though Kane Hodder is a pretty big guy, 6 foot three, 6 foot four, they wanted someone who was going to tower over Robert Englund.
Yeah.
So they chose the 6 foot five guy.
Oh, okay.
And they wanted a really big guy. And this guy's a lot, even more substantial than like Kane Hodder, which is a huge fucking guy.
I wonder if Kane Hodder, I don't know. I like the guy. I kind of, it sucks that like, there's always going to be someone bigger.
That's true. There's going to be another giant.
It doesn't really bear mention because it's actually not a summer camp movie, but the remake in 2009, it starts out, they really try and shoehorn the lore. Mm-hmm. And even in those first 10 minutes, it doesn't make any fucking sense. I don't know if you remember, but they have Mrs. Voorhees showdown with a, you know, anonymous female lead.
Mm-hmm.
And Ms. Voorhees is talking about her drowned son, Jason. It's all your teenage fault, you and your sex and distractions.
Sure, sure.
And then the girl gets the upper hand and off with her head. Although witness to all that is Jason, who didn't drown. Mrs. Voorhees is really overreacting. And there's Jason now, like, cradling his mother and her off head.
Well, that's why you should get all your facts straight before you come at a bitch with a machete.
No court of law could, prosecute.
Which was another thing, though. This is another thing I've learned while watching these movies. Always have a machete.
Yeah,
like a knife won't do, an axe probably isn't going to help you, but a machete seems to do the trick a lot.
It seems all right, I'm speculating, but it's a confident speculation that taking someone's head off isn't nearly as easy as they make it look in the movies.
I think it would be very difficult.
Yeah, and also, I don't know, these are camps. It's not like they're not early conquistadors showing
Thank
up
you.
to like just unkempt wilderness.
I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, I think you're right. So they're not having to cut their way through brush. Like, these are camps and campgrounds. And what the fuck do you need a machete for in the first place?
They seem to get lost quite a bit.
Yeah, but no one ever.
So they might have to murder animals and live out there off the land.
Oh, that's not what they're for.
Upstate New York.
I'm taking a stand. That's absurd. They're not using machetes to kill.
They're cutting through the brush of the jungles of upstate New York.
That's what we'd be led to believe.
Well, it seems to be useful.
Machete's ubiquitous in these movies, though. You're right.
Yeah, and it's really gives you the upper hand most of the time.
I'm also sure there's one thing I don't have to tell any of you. Being a counselor isn't the gravy summer job everybody thinks it is. And what we're going to do over the next 2 weeks, if the rest of my staff ever shows up, is go back to basics. Survival, first aid, boating, archery, rifle range, all of it.
Yeah, no, the first Friday the 13th movies, I'm a little surprised you don't like them.
No,
I dig them. Actually, if you don't like those, I'm curious if you're going to like the one I'm going to recommend it at the end. But
probably
not. You've got one that was made at the same time.
That's
so they,
part two.
They couldn't pump these out fast enough. Hollywood saw a trend, and they just said, teenagers want to watch teenagers die.
Exactly. Camp was like a really popular thing. And now you don't have very many camp movies.
No, like you said, it's for rich kids.
Yeah, so
because no one
it's
can
like,
afford to go out there.
I guess you have vacation movies. A lot of vacation horror now, but not camp so much.
Yeah.
And I wonder what that's about.
And next year, staycation movies where they just people can't afford to go anywhere. So the murderers accommodate them by showing up to their house and killing them on their couch.
At least I didn't have to go anywhere. So during that time, also being made was a film during the time of part two was a film called Madman. Madman Marx is the bad guy in this, the big bad. He's a crazy farmer.
Right. And they use the lore of Cropsey.
Well, but then they had to change it because the movie you're going to talk about, The Burning, I had to make sure that's what it was called.
Yeah.
The Burning came out first, and they were going to get their movie done first, so they got the Cropsey storyline.
Okay.
My film, Madman, had to change it at the last minute.
Okay.
So it became about this killer farmer instead of Cropsey.
Oh, that's... that actually kind of makes more sense. Just the idea of, like, farmer and his crops. That's the only... Okay, so for those who don't know, Cropsey was the New York, New Jersey, Staten Island boogeyman for like 70s and 80s. And I think it was in the late 80s, early 90s maybe, there were some children kidnappings and murders. Mm-hmm. And there's a great documentary called
really
Cropsey. If that one's still on Netflix streaming, check that one out because it is eerie and they take you to the hospital where a lot of the stuff was, you know, supposed to have happened. So that said, like, he was just the boogeyman. He was the tri-state area boogeyman. And so the movie that I'm going to talk about is The Burning. They use him just by name.
Okay.
And he becomes the boogeyman in
that
movie.
So in this one, they couldn't use Cropsey because they knew in this film called Madman.
It's funny how often they like repeat themes and villains, but that's where they draw the line.
Yeah,
like,
you can't have two Cropseys at the same time.
Two mentions of Cropsey.
So they come up with this farmer who he's not a really great guy in the first place. He seems to be like a drunk and he gets into a fight. There's a song. This is how I know all this because it's told to me through song. The legend of Madman Marx, sung by one of the characters. It's terrible. But he gets his nose bitten off. Which is interesting that they, and then he gets slashed across the face with like an axe, whatever. But they go into all this
being
physical detail.
Mauled by a bear when someone tries to cut the bear
like
off
a,
him with an axe,
no,
and it's just
it's
worst
like a
case
guy,
scenario.
Like a guy bites his nose off, but he doesn't notice because he's really drunk. So it's not that's not even what pisses him off so bad. It's just a physical feature that
just
you
wakes
know.
Up with a hangover and a missing face,
and missing his nose. Yeah, but it doesn't matter because they never show him until the very end, and then you see his. Eaten off nose face thing. The whole time what you see are these like rubber gloves that are supposed to be though his hands. It's this like terrible prosthetic rubber overlays.
Wait, so are the hands like an extension of the POV?
Yeah, you see
a POV, just, like,
inflated but then
gloves?
You see him just wandering around also just like, yeah, you see his gloves reaching on shit and he puts out candles with his hands and he's
it's like a first person video game.
Yeah. And he's got really long nails and you see his big giant feet the same way, rubber feet with like toenails and it's absurd.
Nothing scary.
It's a really bad movie. I will say that the music is top notch and the sound effects are pretty good. It's all really cheesy synth.
Sure, but all of these were, yeah.
Yeah, but it's really, really good. Actually, that's the only good part that I will say.
Is anybody of note do that soundtrack?
No.
No?
No.
Wow, okay.
No one of note. But it's awesome, and it's worth it for that. This one takes place at a camp for gifted children. That we mentioned
which
a little bit earlier.
Turns out, like,
doesn't help
computer
anybody.
Computer programming types, not really like figure life out.
Yeah, no,
not
it's
mature.
Not good. A bunch of nobodies in this film, except that Francine from Dawn of the Dead is there.
Okay,
and she looks like really young in this, which is weird since it's 82.
Right.
But she looks a lot better than she did in Dawn of the Dead, I'm not going to lie. And what I enjoyed also is she and the other camp counselors talk with this bizarre accent that's like the same one that Lady Gaga talks in, where it's like a...
Like stuck up?
Like a fancy... Yeah, it's a bizarre accent and they all do it. Because at first... I was not exactly paying attention, and I heard her voice, and I was like, I know who that is. She's credited as someone else in the film. She has a different name.
Wait, the Francine character?
Or? Yeah. Because her real name is, like, Galen Ross, but she is under a different...
Take my name off that
exactly.
Shit.
She's under a different name there. And then also, I think, like, it's terrible. It's a terrible film. There's actually a scene where he's supposed to... One of the kids, one of the counselors, is trying to go downstairs, but the set that they were using didn't have a downstairs, so he literally does that walking down the
stairs thing. That's awesome.
So that was kind of nice. yeah, it's so sad. It's so pathetic. And the sound effects that they give, the Madman Marx, is exactly like when I'm really, really hungry. If you would put like a microphone onto my stomach, it's the same noises. He's like, that's the only noises he makes. And then maybe he'll get foiled a little bit.
I was like, they took an axe to the face and his face, he can only sort of eke out.
I just think he's like guttural. Really hungry. I don't know. And then sometimes he'll be a little
bit. Is he meant to be a cannibal?
He's just a ghost man. He's like, I don't even think he's like a real person. I think he's a ghost. It's not clear.
They don't.
It's not clear. Yeah, I can't really tell you. And so, like, I literally just watched this movie and I can't tell you about that. But then sometimes he gets dejected and he'll be like, it's really sad. Like someone will push him or like he'll trip. He won't do what he's supposed to be doing. And it's like, but it sounds like my stomach. And it's awesome.
I'm going to try and find that sound effect.
The movie was set up for a sequel that never came. Mm. Yeah, the sound effects are... There's some really good music that you should really consider using for this.
I'll try to find it.
Early on in the movie, I'll
just
say...
Was this one on YouTube?
Yeah. Early on in the movie, there was like a question, and I asked myself, and I wrote down in my notes, it said, should I bring a knife to an axe fight? No, she'll die. But it turns out I should bring a candle to an axe fight.
Because someone sets them on fire.
Yeah. Yeah, candle to an axe fight.
Not even a torch, flame on a stick, but a candle. I don't know. Yeah. There's probably symbolism there, but it sounds pretty awful.
I don't know. Which it's funny, yeah, because early in the movie he snuffs out a candle with his hand, so fire doesn't seem to hurt him too bad, but apparently whatever.
But the scene before that he was rolling around in greasy rags.
Yeah.
Oily rags from the garage.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's funny if you want to watch something terrible, I would recommend it. But that's the only time. Sorry.
So, I mean, I guess it's not a coin. Actually, I'm curious how this one sort of treated, like, present day. Because some of these sort of, yeah, they become cult classics. Mm-hmm. But that one sounds just bad through and through.
But the music's really fun.
Watch it for the music.
Yeah.
Watch in the background. All right. Well, there's some movies you kind of just put on and there are radio plays in the background while you're doing something else. All right.
And they're legitimately, I can't even talk. Sorry. There was a legitimate, like, made me go, ugh. There was a hanging neck breaking scene that actually made me be like, that was surprisingly gross.
Not an easy stunt.
Yeah. No, it was pretty good. Apparently the actor would put rubber bands over his neck. So before filming the scene so they could lose color in his face. It wasn't worth it. Like, it wasn't worth that. But it was a good scene.
There's one dickhead on set who's just like, I'm method.
Exactly. He's the same one who sings the song at the beginning. And this is a giveaway, sorry. But he also has a belt buckle with his name, like, TB or T fucking something.
I like
TP. His name is TP, not TB. That doesn't make sense.
No, it's either tuberculosis or toilet paper.
He was toilet paper. But it's on his belt buckle because I had forgotten what his name was for a minute. And then I saw it on this belt buckle and I said, oh, good. Thank you for telling me.
That's why you keep a piece of clothing with your initials on it.
I wish more movies were like that.
That'd be useful. If Game of Thrones had name tags, way easier.
That's what I needed for the Walking Dead comics. Everyone starts to look alike and I don't know who anyone is.
So Mad Men is Mad Man.
Mad Man, not to be confused with Mad Men.
It's not John Hamm as the farmer killing people. Okay, so that brings us to The Burning. And I'm gonna do a voice because
wait, let me rustle my papers. Hold on. I don't want to do it while you're doing your little bit. Hold on.
From the people who brought you The English Patient, Cider House Rules, and Good Will Hunting comes 1981's summer camp slasher movie, The Burning.
Good job.
So actually Harvey Weinstein, who used to be the head and founder of Miramax and also Dimension Films, he wrote this film.
Oh, he wrote this film?
Yeah. He wrote and produced it. It was one of their first outings. And he claims he wrote it before Friday the 13th.
Probably don't believe that.
It is kind of, it's one of these things where it is, yes, it is a ripoff. It is an amalgamation of every slasher movie that had been made before. However, it's really good.
Mm-hmm.
And not even exclusive to the slasher genre, but just as far as like horror movies go, I was impressed. I was really pleased by this.
I'll have to check it out.
I might even, this one I would give a second look. This one's on YouTube in its entirety. It's hard to find elsewhere. It's not on Amazon. It's not on Netflix. But there is an HD version on YouTube. So find that and watch that while you can. It's directed by Tony Malam. He's a British filmmaker who had mostly made documentaries before this, and that should be reminiscent of Tobe Hooper,
right,
who made Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and before that was a documentary filmmaker, and it lends to like a gritty reality.
Mm-hmm.
That said, it doesn't feel so much like a documentary because there's actually some artistry to the film, to the cinematography of the movie. Mm-hmm. A couple shots kind of call attention to themselves, but it's well shot. It's a good looking
You're
movie.
You're playing this up an awful lot, which makes me...
I'm telling you, it's solid. Mm-hmm. I was impressed. So it does directly hearken to the Cropsey killer. Mm-hmm. And in this case, let's see, I'll read a bit of the synopsis. So this is part me, part Wikipedia. In the first 5 minutes, we start at Camp Blackstone, where a group of boys plan a prank on Cropsey. He's the nasty, drunk groundskeeper. Everybody who's meant to be a villain is a drunk.
Yeah.
This is still in the, like... old-timey TV days of, like, you want to demonize someone? Make him an alcoholic.
Yeah, they're drunk.
He's got a problem.
I don't feel so bad. Yeah, exactly.
And with his tolerance goes my empathy. So they're going to play a prank on Cropsey, the nasty groundskeeper. The goal is to scare him, except their trick goes horribly wrong. Or really right, depending on your perspective. And Cropsey's whole cabin catches fire. And he is burned so badly that no skin grafts would take, and Cropsey is reduced to an inhuman freak of nature.
As your average summer prank goes, I mean...
Man, this guy's burned so bad, he's cooked a fucking Big Mac. Overdone. You know what I mean? It's a miracle he's still alive. Was me, I prefer to be dead. No way I'd want to be like this freak. He's a monster, man.
This is all in the first couple. This might even be before the opening credits.
How doesn't he die?
Sheer force of will.
Oh, fair enough. Okay. The will to live.
There's a really good, like, maybe. So the first, like, setting the guy on fire, part of which was Tom Savini.
Nice.
He did some stunts. But, there's a good early scare that. Yeah, it made me jump. I was listening to it with headphones in, so there were a couple moments where I was legitimately, like, startled and scared. So after several years, Cropsey heals and recovers his strength and begins his mission to gain revenge upon those campers that wronged him, except years have passed and they're all new kids at the camp. So,
displaced, misplaced, I suppose.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, he's just generally upset.
Fair enough. He's a dick.
Dissatisfied with life. But yeah, so cut to present day at the camp. There's a really good combination of kids that you like, kids that you root for, and some kids you just want to see die.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Look, it's not just Glazer. It's everybody. I mean, they're all always picking on me. I don't have any friends. I didn't want to come to this camp to begin with, you know? It's like the army. I mean, someone's always telling me what to do all the time. Same thing every year.
Amongst those kids are Jason Alexander, George Costanza.
Do you
from
want him
Seinfeld.
To die?
No, he's actually...
He's not being George.
The script isn't awesome. He's not being George. Him, you would want to, eat it. But no, he's kind of the, like, let's try and get everyone to get along. He's the fun-loving. He's a little heavy set. Like, you kind of see the early George in there a little bit. But he's a lovable character and funny. Fisher Stevens is in it.
Excellent
he
actor.
Is a skinny twig of a young actor in this movie. And Holly Hunter plays a relatively small part.
Random.
But it was all those people's first movies. So this came out the same year and the same month as Friday the 13th Part 2. So it doesn't really... it was definitely overshadowed.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, sort of start of the summer movies in May. So it didn't, that's why you have to dig it up because it certainly didn't get the kind of studio push that Friday the 13th
had.
And
that's why Madman was released the year later in 82.
Yeah.
To avoid competing with those, even though it was being written and filmed at the exact same time.
Yeah. But it sounds like, I don't know. I'm thinking in like order of quality. Mad Men's definitely
probably
at the bottom.
Lowest. Yeah. Probably the lowest.
So how they sort of explain the cast that we stick with, like, this is a legitimate camp. So something like Sleepaway Camp 2, it's seemingly a camp for horny late teenagers, mm-hmm. or early college kids. But this is a full, like, spectrum camp. The older kids, though, go upriver to, or downriver to, like, a more remote cabin where, okay. I don't know, they can do more adult things. It's unclear why they go. It's
but they
adventure.
Get to go there. Fair enough.
They get to separate themselves, and that becomes sort of Cropsey's killing grounds. Yeah, in terms of the scares, there are a couple of really good misleads, and I kind of miss those when you get into, like, more generic slasher movies. Mm-hmm. They stop caring about misdirection or what your yes. expectation is going to be. But this one, there's a couple moments where you're just like, Cropsey's going to get you. No, he's not. And that happens a couple times where it's kind of, I don't know, it reminds you that, like, not everything goes according to plan. There's mm-hmm. it's pretty good on that level. Pretty decent music. I was surprised that there isn't, like, a big name behind Madman, because, well, this one I had to look up, but, well, you know, the progressive rock band Yes.
Okay.
Okay, so Rick Wakeman of Yes did the music for the movie.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think he probably didn't do all of it. I think he probably did a couple of, like, pieces, and you could sort of tell that there are a couple pieces and a couple themes that play throughout the movie, and they mm-hmm. do some pretty effective, like, dropping out of music, and they don't telegraph stuff. It's pretty good.
Nice.
Oh, so Cropsey himself, well, when people talk about the movie Jaws and how you don't actually see the shark until pretty late into it, and then you find out the shark barely fucking worked.
Mm-hmm.
When it didn't look especially realistic. So their best bet was to keep it hidden. Mm-hmm. And, like, you show its POV, but you don't really see it until right. way late. That turned out to be, like, hugely effective in your storytelling. And it turns out in this case, it was a similar case where it seems there's back and forth accounts, but supposedly Tom Savini wasn't thrilled with how the makeup turned out.
Oh.
So they filmed quite a bit with Cropsey, but they didn't actually show him until the very end,
mm-hmm.
at which point I was impressed.
Really?
Yeah. It's you know, they hold it just long enough, and he's not on camera long, but it's fucking creepy.
Nice.
Yeah, it's an effective character. And again, like, figured this guy was burned over 100% of his body. His face is a disaster.
That's terrible.
Incidentally, when they use the POV, and it was a weird, like, I guess I've heard of the camera trick before, but his POV shots have, like, a blurry edge.
Okay.
Which they just rub Vaseline on the edges.
Okay.
Which seems kind of dangerous to do to camera equipment, but whatever you got to do to get the shot. But it, I don't know, it could be seen as a little hokey in terms of, like, the blurred edges. And then I was just thinking, like, guy was burned over 100% of his body. Like, you try that and try maintaining perfect 20/20 vision.
Probably just couldn't see, though. But I guess that's...
Yeah, I don't know how they saved his eyes. That's a good point. Yeah, but...
He just closed them really tight when the fire came.
Maybe he... Yeah, I don't know. They should have done that. He's like, oh, I'm on fire, and just covers his eyes. Actually, that might be good advice. If you ever catch fire... Cover your eyes.
You're dead serious about this?
Absolutely. I mean, you're dropping and rolling, sure, but cover
Why
your
am
eyes.
I on fire?
Because camp kids thought it would be funny to scare you because you're an alcoholic groundskeeper.
I think I should try and get out of the building.
So when things tailspin for you and you wind up an alcoholic groundskeeper.
Fair enough. Who probably rides a bicycle.
Cover your eyes when they set you on fire.
Excellent.
No, but I mean, your eyes are very delicate.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like,
if you cover them and there's no air to be, you know, fuel for
flame. Why doesn't my hand burn?
Oh, it'll probably burn.
Oh.
Yeah, I just think you don't want direct fire exposure on your eye. I think you want to cover your eyes and stop and draw. I mean, your eyes are incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah, I know, but I don't think just covering it with my giant hands would do anything.
Truckosaurus.
You're just jealous because I can cover lots of eyes with my hands.
You know what? That's good. You would only need to use one hand. Pat out the flame with your other giant flipper and cover your eyes with one hand.
You're just jealous of all the cans I can open with my hands.
I can't palm a basketball, but Mindy can. Okay, so this is actually kind of cool, and we're gonna go into this episodes down the line. But this film was one of the first movies to land on the UK's Video Nasties list, specifically because of the infamous raft scene. And so, consistent with a lot of the kills in the movie, they're all daytime. So, like, they don't even need the Jason sneaking up from behind bushes or trees. Like, this is just clever choreography. And there is a pretty brutal, just to give you an idea, he uses shears, like the big hedge clipper style shears. So
they use that in one of the Jason movies later.
Does he?
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see it happening for once or twice, but it's kind of his, like, it's hit, like, Jason's got his machete.
Yeah.
Cropsy has his shears. And so figure everything that comes with that in terms of, like, defensive wounds and hands and fingers, and it's pretty brutal.
Oh, fingers, yes, yeah. For sure.
But yeah, so that's pretty cool. The Video Nasties list is something we'll visit later in another episode, but just the idea of this list of censored movies, and this was one of the early ones. Those are my notes on The Burning, 1981's The Burning. I really dug it, and even, you know, it's a standout in terms of slasher movies and great in terms of camp movies. I was really pleased.
Then I'll check it out, but I mean, I might be disappointed because I don't seem to really like any of these camp movies.
I think you're gonna like this one. If you like the music but not much else about Mad Men, I think you'll dig this one. I think it's actually, I'm gonna say that it is as good, if not better, than Friday the 13th Part 2.
Okay.
Throwing down the gauntlet.
Damn.
All right, that's it for this episode of The Rads Macabre and Summer Camp Horror. I dug it. I didn't like, I think Sleepaway Camp soured me pretty early, but I was kind of thrilled how things turned around. Of course, Friday the 13th is going to help, but The Burning, again, I was thrilled with. Yeah, okay, so we're on all the social media venues, except we got to get a Facebook page. We got to.
Do we? Work is that a out. Thing?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
but in the meantime, all our episodes are up at therantsmacabre.com. And you can listen to those on your phone or computer. We are on iTunes. If you get a chance, recommend us to a friend. Give us a review. Mm-hmm. It'll help us spread the podcast. I feel like I'm missing something.
Twitter. Follow us on Twitter. We tweet things only about horror, not about anything else.
No, we try. We keep it concise and important.
Very.
Okay. All right. That's it for me. This is me, Darren, signing off.
And this is Mindy. Thanks. Are you ready for the summer?